Hey, everybody. Welcome to the NYC Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Mark Levine, also one of the owners of EBMG Property Management Company. We manage about 100 buildings in the New York City area. Today, I've got a great guest, which I'm going to get into in just one second. But just as always, if you would want to email the show, you could do so at nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. That's nycrealestatepodcast@gmail.com. If you wanted to reach out to me directly, 212-335-2723 extension 201. Today we're covering a great topic that's really relevant, and Local Law 97 and all of the energy initiatives that come along with it. And a great guest with New York City Accelerator is Joe Chavez, the Deputy Director for Resilient and Efficient Buildings. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Mark.
Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Before we always get into the topics, I always like to have our guests kind of give a background on who they are, whatever you want to let people know about you and what your current position pretty much entails.
Sure, happy to. And thank you for having me on the show. I am the current deputy director at the Mayor's Office of Climate and Environmental Justice. I lead the Resilient and Efficient Buildings team, and my team is tasked with policies that reduce emissions in New York City's buildings while making the buildings more sustainable and more resilient to threats and hazards caused by climate change. So there's, you know, as you're aware, a lot going on, especially with Local Law 97. So plenty to do with buildings in New York City.
Yeah.
My background, I've been with the city for about 9 years now. Prior to this role at the mayor's office, I was working with the New York City Department of Education, now New York City Public Schools, in their Division of School Facilities, where I was leading an energy team that was working on retrofits in school buildings to, you know, similarly reduce emissions, make the buildings more energy efficient so they can comply with Local Law 97 for the city operations.
So you've really been kind of throughout the city in various means or various jobs throughout the last, you know, long time, decades, right? So if there's anybody that knows the ins and outs, it's probably you. So I really appreciate you coming on. So we've been talking a lot about Local Law 97. Do you want to kind of give us a background on what it is? And I know that not every building is responsible to adhere to it due to various factors. So I'll let you kind of tell us what Local Law 97 is and who has to conform to this.
Sure. So Local Law 97 came out of a need to reduce emissions in New York City. So we're all aware that, you know, climate is changing, and that's due to greenhouse gas emissions that, you know, we as people have been emitting, you know, for the last century at least. And,
yeah.
You know, we, you know, now are starting to see some of the impacts of that with climate changing, you know, warmer temperatures in the winter, increased rainstorms and coastal storms. So, you know, this is just the start of it. And, you know, cities around the world, governments around the world are looking for, you know, ways to reduce their impact on climate change. And so in New York City, you know, we're looking at what is the source of our emissions? Where are most of our emissions coming from? And in New York, that's from buildings. You know, it's like 70% of New York City's greenhouse gas emissions are coming from buildings. And that's different from a lot of other, you know, municipalities and cities around the country where maybe transportation makes up a larger percentage of their emissions.
Right.
But because New York City is so dense with our building stock, the majority of our emissions are coming from buildings. So if New York City wants to reduce its emissions overall, buildings have to be a big part of that strategy. And so that's where Local Law 97 came from. It was passed in 2019 as part of the Climate Mobilization Act. And this was a first of its type legislation that placed emissions limits on large buildings. And so that by large buildings, that's buildings that are 25,000 square feet and up.
Okay. Now my question is, and this comes up in a lot of our buildings that are smaller than 25,000 square feet, which we have a few. They're always wondering, is this going to be a trickle down effect? Because we have various benchmarks for like 50,000 square feet, 25,000 square feet, and I'm always kind of hedging my clients, and I'm saying, I would expect that this could go down to 15 or 10,000 square feet, depending on how the city moves. Do you see anything from your perspective or your insight that will move the needle so that smaller buildings through time, and this may not be a 2030 even, well, maybe it could be past that, but do you see that happening where they're just going to keep driving it down to make all buildings eventually efficient?
I mean, I think the goal is that all buildings are efficient, but is a regulatory, policy like Local Law 97 needed for smaller buildings? That's something that is still in question. And, smaller buildings have different system types, different uses. They tend to be much more residential, especially if you're looking at like one to four family homes. And so, there's less central systems in those buildings. The equipment is different. So I think, right now we're really focused on trying to make Local Law 97 work for larger buildings. I think let's get through this first compliance period and
Yeah.
we'll take it from there. But there's also plenty of incentives available for smaller buildings, especially coming from the state, from NYSERDA. And, now from the federal government, there are rebates out of the IRA that the state is programming to support small buildings. So, the small buildings can take action now, and there's plenty of resources to support them to do that. So, they don't need a regulation at this point.
Yeah. I know we've talked to different vendors who are experts in helping guide buildings as a business. That's what they do. But you, coming from the city, you come from it from a different perspective. So yeah, I get support from the vendors that will help us through the process, and we'll really look at our data and see what we have to do to reduce emissions and try to like figure out, based on the penalties that we're going to get, which we'll get into after, what the cost would be. So it's like that cost benefit analysis to actually do the repairs or to do the retrofitting so that we can lower the carbon emissions and stave off some of those penalty amounts. But from the city side, what are you guys doing to support building owners? And we manage, for the most part, co-op condo. That's our majority. Like really 90% of our business is that. And we do have a rental portfolio. So I guess from my perspective, I'm interested what the city could do on that side. Maybe it won't play so much for my co-op and condo side, but I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening that own buildings and are self-managing. So from the NYC Accelerator and other programs, what are you guys doing to help navigate through this process?
Yeah, so the Mayor's Office of Climate and Environmental Justice has a program called the New York City Accelerator. And this is a free program that's available to building owners where they can get free technical support and guidance to help them not just with Local Law 97, but compliance with other energy regulations that the city has. They are also experts in, understanding all of the various incentives that are available, from utility incentives, again, to the like federal government IRA tax credits, to even incentives within the city for affordable housing. So, by calling the accelerator or visiting them at accelerator.nyc, building owners are able to connect with an account manager who can talk them through, as you said, their energy data, their building type, what their usage is, what their needs are, and then start to direct them to the appropriate resources, and then even guide them through, applying for those resources or, scheduling meetings with, whether it's someone from Con Edison or someone from a financial institution to talk about different types of financing that are available to fund these projects. So really, the New York City Accelerator is a huge resource and again, a free resource for building owners. And you're right that there's a lot of condo owners, co-ops, building owners, and they don't have, you know, an in-house owner's rep or somebody to guide them through this process. So that's where, you know, the accelerator really becomes a strength and a benefit to building owners, because they will almost act as that guide to help, you know, the owner understand all of the issues, the compliance, the regulations, and also what resources are available for them.
Have you guys metriced out how much on average buildings are going to have to spend? Because we have some like really large buildings that may be very energy inefficient, and the cost penalties that we're seeing are, you know, especially to these boards, they're staggering. So when I said before, it's like that cost benefit analysis to see what the retrofitting and what the upgrades would cost versus that, you know, nobody wants to pay a penalty. I mean, I think that's a bad waste of money. It's really putting your good money towards a bad use. So if you can get out of your own way, if you're a building that's like severely inefficient, and make the upgrades, then it works on all levels. You get rid of the penalty phase, but you also make your building a lot healthier to run. Have you guys done the math at all to see what the average cost for buildings to comply by? And there were two benchmark dates, right? There was, maybe we're going backwards, but 2024 was different than 2030. Most of my buildings didn't have any penalty in 2024. And I'd say at least half of them have something in 2030. Can you explain the difference in those two dates and what buildings had to comply with?
Sure. So Local Law 97 was developed as kind of a phased approach. So it takes place over time, you know, starting in 2024 out to 2050, with different compliance periods. And so in each subsequent compliance period, the emissions limits on buildings get a little more stringent. So right now, we're in the first compliance period from 2024 to 2029. And when the law was designed, this was, you know, looking to target the 20% of buildings that, you know, were kind of the worst emitters in the city in terms of their emissions. But also the limits were set in a way that in order to meet the limits for this first compliance period, the work that you would have to do was, you know, pretty much the low-hanging fruit. LED lights, insulation, weatherization, you know, some simple controls, automated thermostats, boiler controls, the things that everybody's been doing for the last 10 to 15 years. And so, you know, that's stuff that there's incentives for. It's not, you know, extraordinarily expensive. And with the recent benchmarking data that we looked at in 2022, it looks like 11% of buildings will actually be out of compliance this year. So that's down 9% from when the law was designed and what they projected. And so that's great. And so for this first compliance period, again, you know, to get into compliance, buildings do not have to spend, you know, millions of dollars or do a lot of extensive capital improvements. You know, it can be some simple work to get into compliance. Then when we get to the next compliance period from 2030 to 2034, that's where the emissions limits get a little more stringent. And so some of the buildings that did the low-hanging fruit may have to, you know, make an investment in doing something a little more intensive. Maybe, you know, it's upgrading your windows or adding extra insulation to your roof, or, you know, starting to electrify either your hot water or heating system, or, you know, invest in much more robust building controls, you know, building automation system that has an energy information system to it that can control your systems based on, you know, conditions like outside, outside air temperature, or, you know, can even respond to like a demand response type situation. So, you know, that's where the costs will go up for buildings starting in 2030. We looked at, you know, all of the buildings that are projected to be out of compliance by 2030 and what it would cost for those buildings to comply. And, you know, all in combined, it's about $12 to $15 billion, you know, for about 15,000 buildings.
Right.
But really, it's hard to say what the cost is for any one building because it truly varies.
Yeah. It's hard from our perspective at times because, especially in the co-ops and the condos, they're closed systems for raising revenue. You know, it's all the people that live there, whether they own an apartment or they own shares. And basically, unless there's like a commercial space or if they have other access to revenue, that soft income, but these are planning years out so that the buildings can afford to cover the costs. And I know that we're being squeezed a little bit with the interest rates. I mean, they've come down a little bit, but taking out new money is very expensive. So I think the sooner that the buildings can actually go through the process of understanding what the cost is going to be and having a longer runway to raise the funds so that by 2030, you're not essentially bankrupting the building because of the upgrades that you have to do. But facing it on the other side, if you didn't do the work, you'd be dinged with the penalties that may have just as a negative effect on the pocketbooks. But I understand that there's two sides, you know, to this, and you know, it's something that the city has mandated and it kind of goes where we have to go. I know that there's been certain things with new construction buildings in terms of like heating, and you can't have I believe everybody has to build new construction with electrical heating systems. Has the city grown out its electrical service, or is that something that's on the table that's steadily growing? Because there is more of a demand for electric as we kind of get out of the oils and the gases. Like, what are, from your perspective, what are you seeing?
So New York City still has a grid that peaks in the summer, meaning, you know, we are using, there's a higher demand and more electrical use in the summer. And so as we start to electrify heating systems, that will increase the demand in the winter. There's still a good amount of room to go with, you know, increasing that wintertime demand to where we would outpace the demand in the summer and be in a situation where, you know, we would have to look at increasing electrical capacity within the grid. But also there's a benefit to this type of work. And that's the energy efficiency side of this. And that as we make buildings more efficient, they also use less energy from the grid. And so, you know, while it may seem like because we're converting heating systems to electric that overall electric demand will increase, you know, it may actually stay the same or go down in some cases due to energy efficiency and the efficiency of buildings. And so, you know, like if we look at buildings that are built to passive house design standards, you know, their electrical loads are, you know, really low. So I think, you know, there, while there's concerns about this, I think that, you know, we're not in a situation currently where it's an immediate concern. I think that this is, you know, much further out and may just be completely solved by efficiency itself.
Are there any unique issues that you see in New York City buildings versus across the country? Besides this local law 11, I'm sorry, besides the local law 97 issues, is there anything that you're seeing just like from where we're located to the services that we have to the, you know, the whatever climate we have, like what kind of stands out to you guys as things to look out for?
I'd say New York City in some ways benefits from having a denser building stock and people living in smaller spaces than elsewhere in the country, because on a per capita basis, people in New York City actually use less energy overall. And so, you know, when you think of that and the opportunities to transform buildings and the number of people that will impact, I think that there's actually, you know, like New York City is a great case to transition our buildings away from fossil fuels and to different technologies for heating, you know, especially for electric. There's also in, you know, work going on in New York State to clean the electrical grid. And so I think, you know, that will also make the electricity that's used in New York City much cleaner. And I think that's maybe something, you know, that's really important to consider as you look at, to different cities across our country and around the world that are looking to electrify and to, you know, in to rely more on electricity is just like how that electricity is generated. If, you know, if the state, you know, grid is still relying heavily on fossil fuels to produce that electricity, then is it really a greener transition? So I think these two things have to go hand in hand. And New York State is doing a lot to ensure that the electricity grid is clean as well, so that when we do make this transition, it is a clean transition.
Well, we have our work cut out. It's 2024. We've got 6 years until 2030. And what was the, I know we talked and you mentioned 2050. I'm not sure if we reached the end of that line. And I understand the differences between 2024 and 2030. What are we expecting to be reduced to in 2050?
So the goal is carbon neutrality by 2050.
Okay. So we have a lot of work to do.
We've got a lot of work to do, but again, you know, as we start to rely more on electricity and the emissions from the electricity sector go down because we're bringing in cleaner fuels from renewable energy, from hydropower, you know, those emissions are expected to decrease as well from the electricity side. So that will benefit a lot of buildings, you know, as their emissions factor for electricity decreases. So in some cases, then you don't have to do anything, you know,
right,
to benefit from that. It's, you know, the work that the state is doing to green the electricity sector.
I appreciate that the city is looking to go in this direction. I think, as you said in the beginning, in your opening statement, we're seeing the effects of climate. I've never had so many buildings that have so many late fall, winter rains that are completely sideways, that are just drenching all these buildings, and the water is finding its way in because it's so warm. We've never had this before. So I've noticed in the last few years that it is affecting how we manage buildings and what damage there is. So I guess stopping the bleeding right now is the goal.
And there's a benefit to making this transition to electrify and to using heat pumps and different technology to heat buildings, because the way, you know, the majority of buildings were heated were through boilers that were located often in the basement.
Yeah.
And so when we get flooding, you know, it's the boilers that are often damaged in this process. And so, you know, as we start to upgrade our building systems, a lot of this equipment is elevated or it's integrated, you know, into the space. And it makes the buildings and these systems much more resilient, so that if we have a coastal rainstorm in the winter, you don't lose your heating, you know, and you don't damage your heating system because it's been elevated or integrated into the space. And so there's also these added benefits of doing this work that, you know, it does make the building much more resilient.
These are all great points that I didn't really think of before, but it makes sense when you lay it out that way. Joe, I want to thank you for coming on and explaining everything from your side about Local Law 97. I know as we continue on, we'll probably talk to different companies also that are helping some of our clients out. And I thank you for giving everybody the information so that we could reach out to the accelerator program. And is there any, I know in past dealings with certain government agencies, the in order to get help from some of them, you needed to have either stabilized or other program apartments in the building. For all free market buildings or condos and co-ops, is the accelerator program also available to them, or is it, do you have to qualify?
No, any building, especially market rate buildings, you know, can get the same free service from the accelerator.
Great. In the description of the podcast, I will give a link to the program so everybody could link out and go to the webpage so that they could see and contact the accelerator program. I really want to thank you for your time and your expertise. I don't take that lightly. I really appreciate you taking, you know, some time out of your day. And if I have any questions, I know where to go. And I really want to thank you again.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate you having me on the show. And yeah.
Thanks. My pleasure. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much.
Bye.